Well, hey, everybody, and welcome back again to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
Jen.
Today, we are going to be counting down another list. We love our lists, don't we, Jen?
Oh, we love lists so much.
And this one is got, I think this one has got both yours and my number. This is our top 10 angstiest moments.
Woohoo!
And I don't think angstiest is a word, but we're using it anyway.
It is now.
But before we get into that, let's read some tweets of the week.
He's made outrageous public statements on an internet site.
That wasn't him. That was me. And they're not outrageous.
All right. Tweets of the week. This is mostly in response to our most recent episode, which was part of our mythology series, specifically about the episodes EBE and Erlenmeyer Flask. And some great comments in response to that. Thank you very much, everybody. From Kathy G. Great episode. I love hearing you two work through the mythology. Thanks. I especially appreciate the connections you point out to later episodes, particularly the revival. Amazing how the pieces fit together. As for the gray t-shirt, I consulted my spreadsheet and found that Mulder wore one in Young at Heart when he was in Scully's apartment with Dr. Ridley. He had a jacket on over it, though, so we didn't see his arms, which to my mind is a crucial part of the gray t-shirt experience. Yes, Kathy G, totally agree. The arms are a key part of the experience.
I just love the part of this tweet that is the gray t-shirt experience, because that's it really is an experience. And I think that we all have come to an agreement that that didn't count.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think the arms are necessary. You can't even tell it's a t-shirt necessarily if he's got a jacket on.
Right. So technically, yeah. And I love Kathy's spreadsheet. It's very useful. I've asked her for things in the past, and it's very helpful. So I guess technically it counts, but as far as the gray t-shirt experience, we're gonna consider it not counting. Okay.
For the full experience, then, you know, that was the first one. So thanks for that information, Kathy. And your intrepid research is always appreciated.
Indeed.
And from Monica Final Fan. First of all, Monica starts her tweet with our favorite new hashtag, pen not men. And if you don't know what that means, then just go back and listen to the episode. Then you will. Mm-hmm. From Monica, she says, commenting on the continuity of the aliens throughout, not only does the man in this episode breathe underwater, but so does Shannon McMahon in season 9, Molly in season 10, that's in Founder's Mutation, and of course Jackson. Mm-hmm. It tracks as part of the basic genetic traits that hybrids carry as they evolve. Those are really excellent points, Monica. I had forgotten about Shannon McMahon in season 9 because, you know, I have a whole thing about forgetting everything in season 9. But I had forgotten about Founder's Mutation in season 10. Those are great points.
Yeah, I think we brought up Jackson from what I recall, but
I think we mentioned Jackson, but I forgot about the other.
I did forget about the other, and those were great to point out. It is something that does track throughout, and that's cool. That's cool. It's a cool thing to notice.
That is a really great thing to point out, so I appreciate that. Thanks. From Call Me Scully, first of all, Call Me Scully, thank you. She's made, I don't know, shall we call this, is it a meme of Pen Not Men?
Yeah.
With the picture just sort of encapsulating the moment of Pen Not Men Pen Not Men written at the bottom. So this has been retweeted on our XFD podcast account on Twitter. So do check it out. Thanks for that. It made me like ridiculously happy. And Call Me Scully also adds, I think technically to pass the Bechdel test, they are supposed to be two named characters. But Dr. Carpenter swoops in and gets the job done in the Erlenmeyer flask. She sure does. Fair point, Call Me Scully. I looked up to see if there was any chance that woman, like, what name was she perhaps given in the credits? Like, was she called, like, Penwoman or something like that?
Yeah.
She's nowhere. She's not on the credits on the screen. She's not in IMDb.
This is interesting because
she's nowhere. I mean, she has a line.
Yeah.
It's a speaking role, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, she doesn't have any kind of a name. So, in that sense, she falls a little short. But we'll take what we can get.
We will take what we can get. She's absolutely right that, yeah. I mean, we were kind of kidding when we did the whole Bechdel test thing on EBE.
But I'm very attached to it now.
But like, point taken.
Really, it wasn't necessarily going to be a subject for that particular podcast. But it kind of took off a little bit, and I'm really quite into it now.
Pen Not Men.
And not men. and from I Had You Big Time, which again, Great handle. I love these handles. Annie and Jen, I love your podcast. Thanks. I had you big time. I'm not quite up to your current episode, but I'm listening and I'm catching up fast. Your banter and the topics you choose to talk about keep me hooked. You're doing a great job, and I wanted to say thank you. You're appreciated. Thank you. I had you big time. You know Aww. What? You're appreciated too, and I appreciate your comment, and I appreciate that you're listening and catching up fast. Good for you.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for that comment, and thanks to everyone for all your comments as always. If you ever want to comment on Mulder's t-shirts or on finer points of the mythology or anything, tweet at us at any time at XFD Podcast. And we would love to interact with you, as would many other awesome files.
Even if you just want to send us pictures of Mulder in a gray t-shirt.
That's always good.
Yeah, we would accept those.
We would happily
gladly
accept and recirculate those to the best of our ability, because you can never have enough of those out in the world. So thanks, everyone. We appreciate you listening, and we appreciate your tweets.
Mulder, the internet is not good for you.
All right, Jen, are you ready to bring on the angst?
Always, always ready to bring on the angst. It's my favorite thing.
I know it is. I mean, it's actually like, God, it's probably one of my favorite things too. But I know between the two of us, you're probably more of the angst fan, which is surprising.
I don't know if anyone's as big an angst fan in this world as I am. So it's a pretty high measurement.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in my Twitter profile, I call myself an angst aficionado, and I'm still trying to get the hashtag angstastic to catch on. So yeah. I'm working on it.
I like that.
So I am 100% about the angst in all things, in the X-Files, in every show I watch, in music. I'm all about the angst, and X-Files brings it in spades.
Yeah. I mean, there's something just about the pain that I enjoy. Yeah.
There's just something. It's got to be a certain something. I mean, we've talked about this, about what defines angst. It's a bit sort of hard to kind of pin down, but like, you know it when you see it.
Mm-hmm.
It's pain, but it's got to be like delicious pain.
Yeah. When we were discussing what qualifies as an angst moment, you were saying, well, I think it's the kinds of things that are, would you say, that are sad, but it's in a good way.
Yeah, sad but awesome, I think.
Sad but awesome. And then I said, yeah, I think I categorized him as makes me want to die, but in a good way.
Yeah, which I love now.
I think that's a pretty valid definition.
That's a really good definition. When I was kind of reviewing my list today, there was a couple of things that I thought were kind of on the bubble. And then I thought, does this make me want to die, but in a good way? And if it did, passes the test.
Yep.
If it didn't quite, then okay. It just really clarifies the issue for me. So that's an excellent measurement. We're going to call that the Annie test for any kind of angst.
I love it. I love it. And hopefully by the end of this, we will not have to pick you all up off the floor out of weepy, messy puddles. Anyway, Jen,
apologies in advance for that, I guess.
Do you want to start us off?
I would happily start us off. My number 10. From the episode Requiem, which happens to be on most days my favorite episode, and it's like an angst party, so no wonder. It's a hospital scene, to no great surprise, and it's the last scene of the episode where Scully is in the hospital, Skinner is visiting her. They're discussing the fact that poor Skinner's like so sad and feels so bad when he says, I lost him. He's lost Mulder. And so Mulder is missing, and then Scully tells Skinner about her pregnancy. And just the way that Scully is and the way that Gillian Anderson is in that scene, it's just this incredible mixture of, like, determination and heartbreak and sort of fear and with a little hint of, like, happiness because she's pregnant. So there's just, like, everything is happening. You want to talk about all the feels? It's literally happening all at once in this scene, and Gillian Anderson is conveying it all at once, and so that's why it's got to make it onto my list. So that is my number 10.
You know, that's actually a really good point, that when I try and think, I mean, Gillian's amazing, and I mean, a lot of her work in, this is like season 7, but a lot of her work in like season 8 in particular is delicious, because there's so much delicious angst. But this is one of those moments that it's really like every possible emotion that she's conveying at once. Because the thing that stands out to me the most about this scene is that little bit of happy. because it's so X-Files to be, we're in this moment of utter devastation. You feel completely hopelessness, like you feel complete hopelessness, like nothing is going to be okay. And yet there's something. And I mean, I think that this mirrors, I mean, I know we discussed this before, that this could have been a really good ending for the series. In its own kind of depressing way, but to me it really sort of mirrors the series finale. It's the same kind of idea. I mean, I know we're doing the pregnancy thing again, but it's the same idea. Like they're in the amongst all of this devastation, we have this little tiny happy thing. And only in My Struggle For they get to actually share it together, which I think makes it a little better. Whereas this I don't remember people complaining about this, but we're not getting into that argument again. But I agree. I love the idea that it's all angst and a teeny tiny little bit of hope. And that's what I want.
Yeah, it is. It's perfectly done. And yeah, I love that one. So that's my number 10. I love it a lot. I'm just going to say all of these ones, I love them all. When I did up my list, I knew we were going to do angstiest moments. When I just sort of off the top of my head wrote down sort of my favorite angsty moments, I had 24. So there were a lot that didn't make the top 10. So these ones that did for me are all pure gold. And that's one of them.
Yeah.
So that's my number 10. What's yours, Annie?
My number 10. Okay. My number 10 is a season 8 bit in This Is Not Happening, one of your favorites. This is the moment specifically, I'm trying to get specific, when Scully goes to Skinner's door. She has a dream about Mulder. And she goes to Skinner's door and she's like distraught and says, what if he's dead? And that's it. And you could tell that she's about to like break down. And it's one of those moments that I really, really love because we don't get to see Scully Skinner stuff very often, you know, especially this intense kind of Scully Skinner emotional connection stuff, which is so nice to see because it just really drives home the fact that like without Mulder around, it's like, who does she have to turn to? I mean, she's turning to Skinner. Like at that moment, you're like, wow, like she's got nothing. And it's so sad. Just that. I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way against Skinner and you're making a laughing face. I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's not the kind of thing I would expect. You know, I wouldn't have expected her to turn to Skinner. I would have expected her to turn to like her mom or you know, somebody else. So I love this moment and the idea that Skinner gets it. Like Skinner was the one who saw Mulder get taken away. You know what I mean? And so she's the only reason, I think, honestly, that she's buying the alien abduction scenario at all. You know, if it hadn't been Skinner telling her what he saw, we might have had a completely different season 8. And I love that idea. I love the idea that they have sort of connected over this and they've bonded over this. And I also wanted to say that there's a cool... I have a cool little headcanon. I think it's a cool little headcanon that Mulder and Scully share a little bit of a connection, like it's almost like cosmic connection through William. Like they're somehow connected. And because the moment that she finds out she's pregnant is the first time she has that dream where she sees him in the dental chair of death, you know? And then she continues to have that dream throughout season 8 while she's pregnant. And then there's also the moment later that he's able to find them when she's given birth. Like Mulder's just sort of inexplicably able to find them. And I just like the idea that they're somehow connected through William in some sort of mystical way. This sort of helped further that theory in my mind. So I just really love this moment.
That's a great headcanon. I think that holds up really effectively and it makes a lot of sense, especially given what we sort of learned about visions and such in the revival. So I think that's terrific. I love that moment too. Skinner Scully, I mean, just like in Requiem kind of almost sort of, it's sort of shades of what's to come in season 8 with Skinner and Scully together. And I love those two together. I wrote down, I friendship them so hard because I don't ship them, but I do friendship them because their friendship is very important to me. And it's one of my favorite parts of season 8, to be sure. So I love them together. I think that they're kind of an adorable pair. And it really comes out of nowhere for me up until sort of season 8. When season 8 comes along, like, who thought about Skinner and Scully as friends? But I find them magical together. And that's one of the reasons I love that scene. It's great. And just when Scully says, what if he's dead? Like, she very rarely in season 8 uses such blunt language.
Yeah. I feel like it's the first time it's a reality, because I think if I'm recalling the episode correctly, I think she had just done the autopsy on Richie's friend. And mm-hmm. I think it was the first time that she was actually really accepting the fact that he could be dead. And in her dream, also, he was dead. And for the first time in her dream, like, he was in the dental chair of death. Sorry, I have to always call it that, because that was
That's
what Twop called it. That's what Jessica called it.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. So that's just what it is to me. But
let's
like,
stick to it.
Yeah. But he was dead in that dream, which is what, what freaked her out and spurred her to go have this conversation with Skinner. Mm-hmm. I love the idea that both of our number 10s are Scully Skinner moments. I mean, I thought, I thought these were going to be all MSR. So I love it. I love it.
I know. I mean, I looked at my list. I was surprised that they weren't, that not all of mine were MSR moments. So it just goes to show the angst can spread throughout the series. It's just, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And I love it.
Yep.
Great. Love it. Great choice.
All right, you're number nine.
Number nine, slightly controversially perhaps, my struggle for the final scene, which we just discussed.
Yeah, oh yeah, that was actually good timing.
That was perfect timing. Scully being pregnant again. Every time Scully announces a pregnancy, apparently I start weeping. And I mean, this is a very weepy scene. It is, it's angsty in a different way from the scene in Requiem, as you pointed out, in the sense that, you know, Mulder's there. The pregnancy part of the scene is sort of the most hopeful, the most sort of unambiguously happy part of the scene. Everything up until that moment, it's not like super happy, but there's nothing bad about the pregnancy. Whereas in Requiem, it was all kind of like, oh my God, what's going on? She's got a little baby. But here it's like, it's a little bit more simple, but of course there's a lot else going on.
Yeah.
Jackson just wound up in the water. Where's Jackson? You know, Mulder in particular is just so devastated in that scene. For so many of my angsty moments, Gillian Anderson is really kind of like just driving home the angst. Yeah. She does angst better than just about anybody, I think. But in this particular scene, David Duchovny, I think, really just knocks it out of the park and really brings the angst in a particularly effective way.
Yeah.
Not overdone, but done enough. And the way he throws the gun in the water, he's just like, he's like a broken man. You can kind of see it. And it's just done very effectively. And it's very sort of heartbreaking. And I, you know, I have issues with the writing in this scene. We won't get into all the ins and outs, but to me, to me personally, this is an example where good acting surpasses problems with the writing.
Yes.
And I think that they took what to me is a problematically written scene, and they just acted the hell out of it and made it into an amazing scene. And it's beautifully shot and has great music at the end. I love the harbor lights and everything. Mm-hmm. And it makes me sad when I watch it and fills me with angst. But then again, there's that tiny bit of hope at the end with new baby on the way. And so I like that too. So it's, there's no question. It's an angsty scene for me. So, and it's really powerful. So that's why it's my number nine.
That's a really good one, and I'm actually surprised that didn't make it on my list. Maybe I'm like subconsciously blocking it because we talk about it so much, but it definitely is worthy of being on here because I agree with you, and I think it's tonally like super a perfect ending in a weird way because I think it is so heartbreaking, but that's this show. That's what it is. It's heartbreaking with a little bit of hope, and that's exactly what we got. And you're absolutely right about David, I think. Gillian usually gets the opportunity more often to sort of do the angst, and I actually, she's fine in this scene because she's always fine, but I think in this scene, David far outacted her, and I know that there was a lot going on behind the scenes, which might have to do with that, and it might have been difficult for her to get into character, and it may not be entirely her fault, but this was David's scene. I absolutely agree with you, and he broke my heart, and I still do think of it fondly. I know a lot of people look up back on this scene and they're angry or they're upset or whatever, and that image of them hugging on the dock, like, that'll stick with me as a really, really poignant final image of this series if indeed we never get any more, which, let's knock on wood and hope we don't. And I did want to shout out to the music. I swear to God, the music makes this scene. 51% of this scene being successful is Mark Snow. Because if that music wasn't there and in the exact way it was there and the, you know, the key change exactly when you need it to, the scene would not have worked. as well. Yeah, so
I agree.
Props to Mark Snow. He can really he might be getting several mentions tonight because he really can rip your heart out, especially when it comes to those angst scenes. So anyway, great pick.
Absolutely. I noticed for a lot of my angst picks, they tend to overlap with some of our favorite bits of Mark Snow's score that we've discussed in the past. And it's no coincidence because his score really highlights these scenes in a really powerful and effective way. So it's just, you know, as always, it's just a perfect match. His music, X-Files angst, magical combination.
Yeah.
Are we on to your number nine? Did you already give your number nine?
Nope, my turn to do nine.
Your turn to do number nine.
Yep. My number nine is from the season two episode One Breath. And this is Mulder in his apartment breaking down after his apartment has been ransacked. He was supposed to be there to kill whoever it was that did this to Scully, but he went to see her instead, and then came back. And it's just this sort of hopelessness that he has. And there's no music, from what I recall, in this scene. He just kind of slides down the wall, and his hands, just the way he kind of opens up his hand. Oh, my God. It's like I'm getting chills, and it's like kind of breaking my heart thinking about it. Just the way his acting of how he opens up his hands, it's like so helpless. Like, I don't know what to do. Help me. It's very like, help me. And it's so freaking heartbreaking. And every time I think about it, and he just cries. And you don't see Mulder. I mean, you do. We're going to be talking about it tonight. This is probably the only episode on which we'll be talking about all the times that Mulder cries. But like, he doesn't cry like super often. Like the times that he cries is very, very, they're very, very important. You know what I mean? They're important moments. And this is just one of those moments that I just think about it and it breaks my heart. And I should tell you that I had on my short list a similar scene, which is the fist fighting scene from Redux when he cries at Scully's bedside, which, spoiler alert, is not on my list because between that and this, I had to knock one off. Mm-hmm. And I think if I have to choose this one this one is I think just more effective because I feel like and I'm kind of going on a tangent because I'm comparing these two, but I feel like in Redux, like we kind of know where Mulder's at. Like we know what he's thinking. We know where their relationship is. And this one in One Breath, I feel like he is just lost. Like he's so confused. He doesn't really know how he feels. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's just such a great sort of representation of angsty baby Mulder. And so that's my number nine.
Angsty baby Mulder. It is a delight. One Breath is a wonderful angstathon. Lots of One Breath came close to making my list, including the scene that you're describing. And also the scene that immediately precedes it when he goes to visit Scully in the hospital instead of waiting around in his apartment for whoever's going to show up. That is like heartbreaking. Ugh. I'm here. And then the scene that immediately follows that when his phone rings and he's not going to get it because he thinks that Scully's going to turn out to be dead.
Yes.
But then he answers it and it's all fine. So
you see him,
all
like,
of that is great.
I actually wanted to, now that you've mentioned that, I have to talk about it because I think there starts to be like his voicemail starts to pick up. Like it's like, you know, you've reached Fox Mulder or whatever. Right. And it's like he's debating picking it up. And then in my mind, I'm always like, he picks it up because he cannot bear to have the message telling him that Scully has died on his answering machine forever. Like, I'm sorry to make it even angstier, but that's like every time I watch that scene, that's what I think is like he said he doesn't want to answer it. And suddenly he's like, no, I can't have that on my answering machine. Like it can't be on tape because that makes it real. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that particular headcanon. My headcanon with that is that it sort of is part of that sort of final act of One Breath, where it's about the fact that Mulder is kind of stepping up for Scully and doing things for her instead of just following his own sort of like angry instincts for revenge. Melissa gives him a good talking to, and he starts being there for her, even though he doesn't want to be. And so to me, he doesn't want to pick up that phone, but he knows he should. He has to. This is another moment where he has to do something really hard, which is pick up the phone and actually hear this. He can't run away from it. So
that's good. He's being proactive.
I like that angle too. Yeah, yeah. So, but I mean, that whole part of One Breath is just perfection angst.
Yeah.
It came really close to making my list. The only reason it didn't quite, My only issue with that scene, that in particular that you're describing with Mulder sort of breaking down in his apartment, it's beautifully done. I think you're right. There is no music. It's just very stark. The way it's shot is really cool. The audio is not quite right for me because there's the crying sound is just a little too loud. That's my only issue. It sounds like something that's been dubbed in afterwards. I don't know if it was, but it just sounds that way to me. It doesn't really even sound like Mulder. And so that always distracts me. So that's my only quibble.
I never noticed it. And now that you've pointed it out, kind of like how you pointed out how Doggett talks and then it started to bother me. Now you're pointing it out and it's going to bother me.
I'm so sorry now. No,
Doggett talking actually never has bothered me. So you didn't do anything wrong.
Thank God.
I'm going to have to go watch that again and listen for that because I don't remember.
No. Just turn the sound off. That's what I should do when I'm watching it. But, once you know what it is with me, once something makes an impression on me, I can never see it any other way.
You can't let it go. Yeah.
Can't let it go. And that's the way I saw it the first time I watched it and can't quite get past that weird noise that happens. But other than that, brilliantly done. And I adore One Breath. So done. Hooray. Are we on to number 8?
Yes, we are.
On number 8, I have chosen the episode Paperclip from season 3. We're getting some really nice sort of relatively early season stuff in here. Specifically the final scene of the episode where Mulder and Scully are at the empty hospital bed where Melissa Scully was, but now she's dead. And it's super sad because, first of all, poor Melissa, we just started to get attached to her in One Breath, and now she's gone, and Scully feels super bad about it. The music in this scene is really excellent. I'm going to shout out to the music for this one. There's an amazing hug at the end, and the dialogue in that scene to me is just stellar. There's so many lines in there that are like lines of gold for me that I always remember forever about, when Mulder's talking about, it's something we have no personal choice in. It's about fate. I mean, that is like boom, boom, boom. Love it. And in talking to Scully about, we've both lost so much. What we're looking for is in the X-Files. I'm more certain than ever that the truth is in there. And then Scully says, I've heard the truth, Mulder. Now what I want are the answers. I mean, just the fact that Scully is sort of saying, yeah, I know, I believe this to some extent now. This is the truth to me. I buy it, but I want more. I need to have more. And I love all of that. Scully saying there's no justice. I mean, every bit of that dialogue is perfection. And they deliver it beautifully. They're both almost like whispering. They're talking super quietly. And it's just very intimate the way it's done. And the acting from both of them is really strong in that scene, too, because Scully is just so, heartbroken about Melissa. And Mulder is just so tender, and he is just there for her. And again, there's that little tiny bit of hope, like we can go after this. We are going to keep going. We're going to pursue this, and we're going to do it together. And there's just this wonderful sense of angsty togetherness, which I always enjoy. So that's my number 8.
Yeah, that's a really good one, and I wasn't expecting it. That's actually a really great episode, a really great moment. I mean, sad, gosh. God, everyone dies, man. It's one of those things where when you talk about the idea that they're just constantly talking about finding justice, like seeking justice, and they never really get it. They don't, do they?
Yeah,
and I mean, that's realistic, though. I mean, that's one of the things about the show that's like, it's like you're never quite going to get there, but there's always going to be that hope. Like,
yeah, exactly. I mean, Mulder actually says in the scene there, this isn't about justice. This is about fate.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. I mean, that's big shit. I mean, I just love, that's one of the things that's it for the X-Files for me. It's not about justice. Lots of shows are about justice. Mm-hmm. This is about fate. It's like way bigger than justice. This is as big as it gets.
Yeah.
It's like, big, big topics and big, big stakes and just, a really big vision. And I love this whole idea of fate. And this was like, relatively early on in their relationship, they didn't talk like this very much at that stage, nor did they hug. I mean, whoa, hug.
And there's a nice little handhold here. Like when he reaches over to sort of put his hand on hers, which I don't recall that as much. So
So great. So yeah, it's just it just represents a lot of what I love about them as a pair and what I love about the X-Files. And it's just one of those scenes that had a boom effect on me when I watched it, because it was very early on, and to hear all this, you know, this is a lot of the kind of stuff they were talking about in the final scene in The Truth in season 9 about, you know, fate and the truth and things like that. And I mean, I love those conversations. And so to have something like this at a relatively early stage was really awesome, and I loved it. So,
well, I know you always like when they talk about the truth with capital T.
I actually wrote it as a capital T in my notes.
I agree. Well, and you know how much I love parallels, so I have to point out the parallel here of this to My Struggle 3. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you picked up on that, but remember when he says to her, "The truth is in the X-Files."
And
and she says the same thing to him in My Struggle 3 at the very, very end. And it's funny because I remember at the time people thinking, oh, what a lame line. And I'm just like, you know, that came from Paperclip, right? Which was an episode I think most people liked. anyway,
no, I love that line.
It was a good excuse to be like, why are we going to keep working? Like, why are we going to go from this to DPO? You know what I mean? Like, how do we go from Melissa's dead to a guy is frying people with lightning hands? You know what I mean? Like, and that is how we explain it, and that's how we move forward. Yeah. And I mean, I feel like they had to do the same thing in My Struggle 3. That's kind of how they sort of move from one episode to the next. Like, hey, well, we're still working on the X-Files. We're still looking for the truth. And I like that. I like that they brought that back much, much later in the series. So.
Yeah, I loved that. And yeah, absolutely. It's this idea that whatever truth we're pursuing is in the X-Files in whatever form that takes. And the truth takes many forms in the X-Files. And so, yeah, I love that stuff. So, and I love Paperclip. It's one of my favorite episodes. So, yay for Paperclip. What is your number 8?
Okay, my number 8 is, again, another little sort of tiny moment. This is Dead Alive. Because, again, this is also a nostalgic thing. Like, I was going to pick the hospital scene at the end with Scully and Mulder as he's waking up, because that means a lot to me. But this one, to me, was the moment that I kind of took notice, where I was like, whoa, what the fuck? What is this? And that's the moment when Scully rushes into the hospital. She's just heard that Mulder's been dug up, and she was rushing in the hospital, and she's like freaking out. Like, and I have the script for this episode, and I remember reading that it's scripted that she is just out of her mind with like need to see him. Like, it's like, I need to see him. And I mean, she's shaking Skinner, I need to see him, and like freaking out, and she's crying. And it's just one of those moments where I was just like, what is happening? What is going on? Who is this woman when I first watched this episode? And why does she need to see this dead man? What is happening? Like, and it was just very, very poignant to me. And I always remember it. And it was just such a nice, wonderful display of emotion in such a short amount of time from Jillian. And so that's my number 8.
That's amazing. I mean, I love that. Dead Alive is a great angsty episode. I had a couple of scenes from that came close to my list. And yeah, I can imagine that if you didn't really know who all these people were exactly, that would be very striking, because it's a very powerful moment. You know, if we're used to watching 8 seasons of The X-Files, this is just, especially if we've watched all of season 8 up to that point, this is like, okay, well, this is sort of Scully as usual at this point. But if you've never watched it before, I would think it would be like, holy fuck, like angstastic. What is happening?
Yeah.
It's very like, it's very powerful. It's a powerful moment, to be sure. And very strange. Like, what the hell is happening here?
Well,
it's strange sort of circumstances, but the emotion is very relatable. And that's what so often is the case on The X-Files.
Yeah. My first thought when I remember watching it was, oh my gosh, she's in love with this guy. I just remember thinking that, because I'm like, why would she be reacting this way? That was sort of, and I remember, I never went back after that. So
anyway. Nicely done. Shipper from the beginning.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
It didn't take much.
Yeah. We hadn't even seen him yet.
It never does, right?
I literally saw a dude in the coffin, and then I saw her running in, and I'm like, well, they're in love, obviously.
He wasn't even alive at that stage, and already you're shipping them.
God, they have chemistry even when one of them is dead. Pretty impressive.
So that's absolutely accurate, true. And that's like Jillian knocking it out of the park as usual, and Scully and Skinner. So
true. It is more.
That's
Skinner.
It's another great Scully Skinner moment.
Yeah.
Which leads into my number 7, which is from This Is Not Happening. and Scully and Skinner. It's just an extension to the scene we've discussed already, where you had on your list of Scully going over to Skinner and, you know, what if he's dead, just outside of Skinner's motel room in the middle of the night. I chose the part that sort of immediately follows that, where Skinner goes with Scully sort of out into the parking lot, and they're just sort of talking and looking up at the sky, and Scully is recalling the conversation she had with Mulder about Starlight and how Starlight goes on forever, even after stars have died, and that they represent souls and things like that. I mean, heartbreaking, beautifully written stuff. Plus, it's a callback to another super angsty moment, which was Mulder and Scully talking about this whole sort of Starlight souls thing back in Closure in mm-hmm. the context of Samantha. Mm-hmm. So yay for that angst bridge, and Scully and Skinner together again, and love that. Beautifully done. The music's really great in that scene. And I mean, poor Scully, she's just, because she is, it is kind of like hitting home that, you know, he could be dead, and she's at a real low point at that moment. You know, she really just kind of, throughout season 8, she's trying to keep it together, and that's one of the few times where she's really having trouble doing that. But Skinner is there for her and gives her a lovely hug in a non-shippy but friendshipy way. Mm-hmm. And I love it. It's just beautifully done, I think, and that's why it's my number 7.
This was one of the ones I knew was going to be on your list. I was like, yeah, this you is know totally going to be. And I almost left off my Scully Skinner bit because of it, but I was like, no, I got to put it on there because it's super important. Mm-hmm. And they are two different moments. They're two different scenes. I agree with everything you said, obviously, but I have one thing written on my notes, and it's actually an LOL. So sorry to steal away your angst, but there's a moment moment in this scene where he says, nothing says we're going to stumble over him in some field. And I wanted to be like, except the script, bitch. It's like when you hear him say that, it's actually funny now when you know what's going to happen. Because why did they write that? Why did they write that line? They literally know in that episode they're going to stumble over him in a field. Anyway.
But I mean, up until that point, they have been kind of stumbling over people. It has been happening.
Right.
To some extent.
Right, right, right. But, it's just funny. I found it funny, and it kind of ruined the end of that scene for me.
That's fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. That's never been my favorite line in the scene, to be honest. So, because it does feel like an odd thing to say. Fair dues.
It's like, what are you doing
over that bit?
Yeah, what are you doing, Skinner? You're like, you're putting actual terrible images in her mind. Like, you're not being helpful. Like,
but I think he meant like stumble over him alive in a field. That's how I interpreted it.
No, I think he's trying to tell her that we're not going to find him like we found Richie.
Yeah, we're going to find him alive in a field. That's how I take that.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
It's true. Everyone needs to go back, watch that scene, make up your own mind. What do you think? Is he saying that Mulder's going to be alive or dead? Let us know on Twitter.
No, I mean, of course he's trying to tell her that he's going to be alive. Of course he is. But I'm just saying, like, when you say nothing says we're going to stumble over him in some field, he's obviously saying, like, he's hoping not to find him like that. And so all I'm saying is, by him saying that, it's putting that image in her mind.
It. Yeah. Yeah. See, I still always thought that was his way of saying, we're just going to find him by accident and he's going to be fine. That's how I kind of took that. Although I can see that it does make a lot of sense to say, we're not going to stumble over him dead. It's like, well, why would you say that then?
Yeah, I think you should rewatch the scene, because I think one of us is reading this wrong. So
it's okay. We can.
We'll have to figure it out.
We can agree that the line is problematic in a couple of different ways, no matter how you look at it.
It's not a great line.
The idea that he's saying, like, oh, he's not dead in a field. Like, why would you say that?
Exactly. That's my point, is why would you say that? It'd be like,
Don't bring that up.
It's like saying he's not bleeding out somewhere in horrible pain. Don't worry, Scully. Like, it's so unnecessary.
Yeah. When I think can put it that way, it's actually quite hilarious.
You know,
so.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I LOL'd. That's why I wrote LOL.
Yeah, I kind of see where you're going with that. That yeah. actually probably makes more sense than Skinner's my version, like, when I think about it.
Yeah, Skinner's not so good with the comforting, you know?
He shouldn't say anything.
No talking.
He just needs to talking. Just take
hugging.
Your big strong arms.
Yeah, exactly.
And your big strong chest and give Scully a hug. That's all she needs from you right now. Right. So, yeah, he's a bit sort of, you know, he's not the greatest at emotions, and that's okay. He's great at other things. That was my number seven. What is your number seven?
All right. My number seven is from season 7, episode Seinhund Zeit. And this is the moment in Mulder's apartment when he breaks down because his mother has killed herself. Mm. And this is probably, other than like the fist biting in Redux, this is probably the most we see Mulder cry. Right?
Yeah. This is my favorite Mulder crying scene.
Yeah. This is David killing it. Doing like awesome job. Sorry. My dog needs his ball. Here.
Hello, Apollo.
Go get your ball. Sorry. He's ruining our angsty moment. But anyway, when Mulder breaks down and Scully is doing everything that she can do to get him to stop, like to stop this sort of self-torture, this self-flagellation that is so Mulder, that is just, and she just can't bear it. Like it's heartbreaking. Both of them do so good in this scene, and it's such a quick scene. It's really quick. He gets angry, he's sad, he's all, again, this is another one of those moments where it's just all kinds of different emotions, and this is like David's moment for that, because he does a really, really good job of conveying all these different emotions, not happiness, but a bunch of other ones. And then Scully is just, you know, yeah, Scully comforting him, and just that hug is just super intense, and really, really, really sad, very sad moment. God, this whole two-parter is just all sad. All sad.
It's very much an angst-a-thon.
Yeah, yeah. But
that's,
yeah.
Great moment, great choice. Came very close to making my list as well. I love the sort of slightly overhead shot at the very end of the scene of them hugging. It's a kind of a unique angle, and it works really well for that moment of kind of sort of angsty intimacy between them.
Yeah.
It's all really well done, that scene. And you're right, David just is brilliant in it and doesn't overdo it. Like I say, it's my favorite Mulder crying scene. I don't always love the Mulder crying scenes, but this one I think he does an amazing job with. And yeah, it's just, it feels very real in terms of how people react to grief. And he has no one now.
Yeah. Like, I love the idea, because you think he's completely familyless. He has no more family, and it's just him and Scully. And I think that that's what makes that shot all the more powerful, because it's just their isolation and then all this emptiness around them. It's a really, really powerful moment, and something people maybe don't think about when they're watching it, that, hey, oh my God, he has nobody now. Like,
yeah.
And it's not like he ever had like a great relationship with his mom, but you can tell that things were like strained, but I mean, it's still his mom. It's the same thing as like Scully and her dad. It was like, at the end, it was like, well, he's my dad. You know, it doesn't matter. It's still him becoming an orphan. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's just heartbreaking.
It is. Yeah. Like that last sort of connection he's had to his childhood, to Samantha, to his family. It is heartbreaking, and the way he loses her, and the fact that he thought he was on to something with regard to Samantha, and, you know, this whole sort of theory, this conspiracy theory he was developing that his mother had been murdered and all of that. And all of that is just sort of, you know, falls apart like a house of cards when Scully tells him that she actually took her own life. And it's just everything. There's such loss in that moment in terms of his mom, in terms of the hope he had, in terms of finding Samantha. It's very powerful, and it's a very heavy, well acted moment.
And it's like, we already knew that his sister was gone, but like, just to know too, that it's like the double whammy of him about to learn that his sister is truly dead. Yeah. All within like the same couple days. You know what I mean? It's just, Mulder did not have a good weekend.
It was tough.
Yeah, it was rough for him. And I mean, I think too, how hard that must have been for Scully to do all of that, like for her to do that autopsy for him, and then for her to have to tell him that news. I mean, that must have been so hard for both of them. So just a super angsty moment. That's my number seven.
Yeah, that's a very strong number seven. Angstastic. Mm-hmm. My number six. Speaking about moms, it's from Ascension when Mulder meets up with Maggie Scully in the penultimate scene of the episode. I wrote down Mulder-Maggie scenes are as angstastic as Skinner-Scully scenes. They're kind of similar in the sense that they're both kind of like sort of parental type figures. And when they get together, boom, angst happens. And I love it. And this is like one of their first, maybe their first proper scene together. And it's just like they've got like this really lovely chemistry together right from the very beginning. You can just get a really strong sense that they have this bond and that they both love Scully. Mm-hmm. And that these are like the two people in the world that probably love her the most. And they're both so worried, but they're both trying to kind of give each other strength as best they can. And like Maggie Scully's being surprisingly sort of open with Mulder talking about, you know, having dreams about Scully being taken away and Mulder trying to sort of comfort her and quite successfully too and making her feel a little bit better. We've got the cross comes into it. Every time Scully's cross comes into things, I lose my shit. And that was such a key sort of image throughout her sort of abduction arc. And that is like heartbreaking when, you know, Mulder tries to give it to Mrs. Scully and she's like, no, you hang on to it. You give it to her when you find her. It's like, oh, my heart. That is so beautiful. Yeah. And Mulder's looking super angsty and super hot because he hasn't quite shaven that much in the last day or two. And he looks amazing and super sad at the same time. So I love all of that. And then quick little scene right after that when Mulder's on Skyland Mountain, just kind of gazing up at the stars, sort of like this sense of like desperation and futility of like, that's the last place that Scully was and where are you, Scully? And, you know, this overhead shot of him as the episode wraps up. I just love all of that. And Ascension's a super angsty episode. The abduction arc is like angst picnic, and I love that part of it. So that's my number six.
That's a really good one. I think that what I like about this too is, like we've said before, the idea of the little bit of hope, and I think that's what the cross is in this.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like every time that cross, I mean, the idea too that Mulder brings up the sort of dichotomy of Scully and her skepticism and her belief. This is the first time they really kind of he acknowledges it, at least to us. Which is interesting and also just such a nice little thing. Like the idea that Scully is a skeptic, but part of her wants to believe that there's something out there. And I like that. I like that the cross is sort of a symbol of that. And so, again, it's kind of balancing out the angst with the little bit of hope. And, you know, I'm a sucker for that. So good pick.
Love it. Love, love, love it. What's your number six?
All right. My number six, this is a different kind of angst.
Right.
It's a little bit of
angst comes in many flavors.
Yeah. This is a little bit of jealousy angst. This is in the episode The End when Scully in the car, and you all know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
This is the moment, I think, that where Scully is necessarily realizes that she's in love with Mulder, because I feel like that's already maybe happened, but I think this is the moment where she realizes, like, fuck, like, what do I do? Like, this was so unexpected that Diana Fally has now entered our world and there's some other person here who he trusts. I'm not used to that. And I don't like that. And I don't like how this is making me feel, you know? And you don't even need any dialogue, obviously. Like, you get that from the scene. And it's literally just her sitting in a car staring. And you can see on her face that it's more confusion than anything else. I think because she's sort of being forced. This is why I love Diana Fally as much as everyone hates her. She's being forced to admit this stuff to herself. And I think that that's what happens when someone else is introduced, you know, a sort of third party is introduced into a ship that is not happening. It's going to make everything just delicious. And that's kind of why I love the Fally arc. Yeah, they could have handled it a lot better, and they should have, because there was so much potential for so much delicious angst. But the best of it, I think the most satisfying of it was this moment in the car, because we don't really get to see Scully like that. I mean, you don't get to see her. The only other sort of like jealousy Scully is just her kind of being, kind of snarky or bitchy, you know what I mean? And I don't mean it like in that kind of like negative way, but just not just her being sad. You know what I mean? Like she sees them through the window holding hands, and then she's in the car and she is like devastated. And it's one of those, it's just one of those moments too, where it's like the first time, this was season five, end of season five. It was one of the first times that they've openly acknowledged, hey, you know, we're doing something here that isn't just these are platonic friends. I mean, and this is going to lead right up into the Fight the Future near kiss. So it's like they're ramping it up like crazy. And I think this was such a beautiful moment to have right there in the series where it was. And yeah, wonderful. That's my number six.
Fantastic. I love that moment, too, as much as I despise Diana Fowley. I love that moment. It came really close to being on my list. I sort of hesitated to put it on my list for a second because I thought, is anyone going to know what I'm talking about when I talk about that moment? It's a very sort of, it's a moment you can't describe with dialogue or anything like that. And then it turns out to be on your list. So obviously at least you know that moment.
Oh, yeah.
And I suspect a lot of other people do too, because it is quite memorable. The music is great in that one. I love the music in that scene. And it's Gillian Anderson just kind of like just
emoting,
taking us through a journey of emotion with her facial expression. And it's like you can just like see the thoughts going through her head. And you know, because there's no dialogue, we don't know for sure what she's thinking. And so you can kind of bring your own interpretation to it. Obviously, it's something that's been triggered by seeing Diana Fowley and Mulder together. I tended to kind of see it as her fully accepting, realizing her feelings for Mulder.
Yeah.
I think that she knew she felt something for him before, but I think to me that's the moment when she's acknowledging it, like, "Welp, I'm fucked." Like,
yeah, it's exactly. Just,
yeah,
yep.
I am in this deep, and
exactly.
And also, you know, definitely an element of sort of jealousy and like realization, like I may have fucked this up, like. I'm realizing that I'm seriously in love with this guy and simultaneously realizing I may have missed my chance possibly. Like, is it too late? Like, what do I do?
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do now? Mm-hmm. I always assumed that he was my guy. And now I realize that was kind of not the best assumption to make, because now something else has come along to mess that up. And I have no clue what to do, because for 5 years we have operated just fine. The two of us, I've never had to worry about whether he would be there for me and whether we would continue in this kind of unique relationship that we're in. Maybe I didn't feel the need to define it because it was fine the way it was. But now you can't keep coasting on that anymore, because things have come and things have been messed up. And it's an amazing moment. It's an amazing moment in their relationship, considering it's Scully sitting by herself in a car.
Yeah.
No dialogue, no other actors. And yet it's like a really key moment in sort of the Mulder-Scully relationship over, you know, the whole arc of the series, because I think it is a key moment. And it's a great point that you make as well, that it kind of leads nicely into Fight the Future and where they're at with that, where like, you know, maybe Scully is becoming a little bit more motivated to express herself a little bit more to Mulder.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, I feel like she's also doubting. She's also starting to doubt, because he's put that into her, you know, through no fault of his own. He's not doing anything wrong. You know, he's not there. He's not cheating on her. He's not doing anything directly to her. It's just the fact that by merely existing, this third party merely existing, has made her begin to doubt what she means to Mulder. And I feel like this all plays so heavily. And I mean, it's I don't want to say it's a shame that Fowley is not in Fight the Future, because I don't.
Oh, that is not a shame.
It's not a shame, because I actually do think she's very much so there, like in the back periphery of people's minds because of all the stuff that's going on. But it is interesting when you roll it all together, the idea that these storylines do kind of connect and build upon each other as we enter into season six, and what season six end, like where it goes, where it's headed all the way through the end of season six. So this scene of her in the car sort of sets her on that trajectory. So I'll never forget it. And I would be surprised if there are files out there that don't know what I'm talking about. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, please let me know, because I'm curious as to how poignant and memorable this moment is to people, because it certainly certainly was to me, and I can tell it was to you too. So
you should definitely go and watch it if you don't remember it, because it may not have stood out in your mind at the time, but you should go and enjoy it and bathe in the angst.
Yes.
Because it is an amazing and wonderful scene. And, you know, I was just thinking that, you know, it's such a an interesting and effective and wonderful choice that they made on the X-Files, that this is what they chose to do, because I can imagine a lot of shows that to sort of achieve this sort of moment, they'd have Scully talking to a buddy or to somebody else. Oh, I don't know how I feel about Mulder anymore. And she would sort of articulate all of these feelings to somebody, some confidant. And so I kind of, it's very cool. And because they know Jillian is as good as she is, that they didn't feel the need for her to have to explain herself to somebody, that she would be able to explain it to the audience without words, which she did. And I think that it was really effectively done and in a really cool way.
Also, you're absolutely right. But also, I mean, that's not really Scully. That's not like a Scully thing.
Yeah, no.
To be like talking.
It wouldn't be Scully thing.
I often wonder if Melissa had stuck around, if she hadn't been killed off in season three, which again, I can chalk up to be yet another obstacle to the MSR. If she would have had someone to talk to, and if she would have had somebody to sort of push her in the right direction. You know what I mean?
Oh, hell yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I wonder
definitely.
If in this moment we have Scully talking to Melissa, for example, who might be one of the only people that she would confide in about this, what would happen? How would things be different? It's just interesting to think about, especially since we were just talking about Melissa. But yeah,
maybe in her head she's imagining what it would be like to talk to Melissa at this moment. Maybe she's also missing Melissa.
I can
throw that into our headcanon.
I bet you anytime she has like these sorts of issues, she probably imagines what Melissa would say. I have a feeling.
Yeah.
I like the idea of that, because you know, you can a lot of the time you can predict what people close to you are going to say. You'd be like, okay, if I said this to them, I know what they would say. And I feel like, especially if you've lost somebody, you might do that. And I kind of like that
idea. And I think we know from the end of season 8 with Essence Existence, when Scully does mention Melissa to Monica, it's just evidence that Scully, even though we don't hear her talk about Melissa all that often, it's just a reminder that she does think about Melissa a lot.
Yes.
And probably, you know, when you lose someone, especially in that sort of traumatic fashion, I think that they're never far from your mind. And so I think that that's kind of, things would have been so different if Melissa had hung around. Really, they would have been having William in by like season 4, probably.
Yeah.
It would have been like, there would have been like no suspense.
She would have literally taken them and bashed their heads together and be like, you two idiots. Yeah, she would have been like, I want to have Christmas celebrations with my sister and her hot boyfriend. We're doing this now. Yeah. No.
You're doing this.
You're totally right.
Melissa was an early shipper, and she saw it. Mm-hmm. She could see it, and good for her. We all love Melissa. She's, in terms of the ratio of number of episodes to how much people love the character, Melissa is right up there because she wasn't on very much, but she made a wonderful impression on all of us. So I can see why Scully's always thinking about her.
It's nice to see, you know, other female characters that are interesting. And I know the X-Files didn't have many, but the ones that they did have, I think most of them, I think they did a decent job of making them somewhat interesting. The ones that were at least good, like Maggie Scully and Melissa Scully and... I know we digress. We got off topic here, but I did want to say, just because you brought up the Essence and Existence thing, when was the last time Melissa had been mentioned since?
I don't know if she was mentioned
at all
since she was killed.
No. She mentions her, I think, in like Christmas
Later
Carol.
On that season.
No, like in Christmas Carol, when they're at Bill's house, I think she's like, I think her mom says, I'm missing your sister or something.
Yeah. There's a flashback, isn't there, in that one, in Christmas Carol?
There is a flashback. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
That's right.
All right.
We get a whole flashback.
We're getting off topic. I apologize. But that was my number 6, Scully in the car in the end.
Yeah.
So what is your number 5?
Number 5. My number 5 is from season 6, from Dreamland 2, when Mulder and Scully say goodbye to each other because they think that nothing can be fixed. Everything is sadness. If they try to fix it, Mulder's head's going to wind up in a rock or something. And so they have to say goodbye forever, I guess. And they're both super sad and trying to keep it together. And Mulder gives her sunflower seeds at the end, and it's super sad, and he takes one back, and Oh my God. And Scully says, I'd kiss you if you weren't so damn ugly. And like the look on Mulder's face when she says that is though, like, you don't want to kiss me anyway. And he's just like, he just like, there's those moments of sort of, they're, it's just classic Mulder and Scully moments of levity. They're trying to keep it light, but you can just see that their hearts are breaking. And it's this weird sort of X-Files situation. He's in someone else's body. And so they're like, we don't, what do we do here? Like, how does this work emotionally? And they just, their hearts are breaking and so are mine. And that's my number five.
I remember when we talked about our favorite episodes and Dreamland came up and you were like, I forgot how angsty this was. Because right. And I know we brought it up before how the fact that it's kind of smack dab in the middle of a comedy episode, it comes at you without warning. And you're just like, where are all these feelings? What is happening? That's a great pick. I love it. And you know what I wanted to point out to you? Like the idea that, yeah, they're never going to see each other again. And they're both being very reserved.
Yeah.
Except for Scully actually, like you said, saying, I'd kiss you if you weren't so damn ugly, which is a joke and it's funny. But when you really, really think about it, like where they're at, it's like the first time that the idea of a kiss has been acknowledged between either of them. It's kind of her saying, I mean, it's like, it's almost like a mirror image of the triangle kiss. It's like whether Mulder dreamed triangle or not, he's sort of living out that unfinished kiss. In triangle, saying like, essentially, if I die, this is what I want to do, which is so freaking romantic. I don't even know what to do with that. But Scully is sort of saying the same thing here. And it's like when it's sort of safe, they both can show a little bit of bravery. That's kind of where we're at with them. That's kind of what season six is wavering on. With all the angst that we get in season six, we get a lot of these lighthearted moments, too, where they are trying to be brave. They can't quite get there. And I mean, it kind of builds up to like, okay, Scully making out with his forehead in the hallway at the constant touch. And then Mulder finally going for the kiss, but doing it at New Year's, which is the safest possible time to do it. You know what I mean? And it's, and again, this is all, you know, this is all purposeful to drag this out as long as humanly possible. But as much as it's irritating to the viewer, it's also extremely, I think, realistic for two people that really want to do this and can't, because for whatever reason, it's like getting harder. The more time that passes, it gets harder and harder to do it. It's harder and harder to be brave the longer this goes by. And so I feel like season six is so good with that. And this is a great example of it. I know that's not really to do with the angst, but MSR talk always comes up. So,
It's all connected. Those are a really, really excellent points as well. I think that, when Scully says, I'd kiss you if you weren't so damn ugly. It's as my mother would say, half in jest and full in earnest.
Yep.
Like she really means it about the kissing part. You can kind of see it in her eye. And Mulder really means it too when he sort of reacts to it. So
they may as well have kissed.
It was like they basically sort of agreed in that moment. I would definitely kiss you now, and I would definitely accept a kiss from you now. It's just the circumstances won't allow it.
I feel like you said last time that you called it a verbal kiss. And I liked
that. Because that was a smart thing for me to say.
You did. I think you did say that. And that's exactly what it is. It's like yet another continuation of the kiss we didn't get. It's like they keep wanting to fake us out. People always remember the Fight the Future as a fake out. But like they kept doing it, man. Like they did it in Triangle. They did it here. Yeah, like
That's true.
They kind of did it in Arcadia when they kind of did her little fake kiss when she stands up and goes to the thing. Like they were playing with us like all season.
Yeah,
It's just brilliant. I love it. And
they were just playing around with this whole idea of, you know, under the guise of kind of, you know, either fantasy, dreams, or jokes, this kind of like, are we kissing? Are we not kissing? We're kind of kissing, but not really kissing. And it's just this sort of very long kind of, we're sort of circling each other. And this works really well. I mean, that's season six in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And I love it. I think it's great. And yeah, this definitely, I think that's a great point that this represents that really well.
That's a really good moment and a very unexpected one. And I really like that you picked it.
Love it. All right. What's your number five?
My number five, I don't think anyone's going to be surprised that this made my list because it's one of my very favorite episodes. The very, very final scene of Never Again. When we have Mulder and Scully at their sort of impasse and they're sitting with a giant desk between them, you know, which is essentially a metaphor for all the stuff that they are not saying. And it's just such a wonderful scene. That whole scene is a great, like, angsty mess. But that particularly that moment when he says, all of this because I didn't get you a desk. And she says, this isn't about you. Or she says, not everything is about you. This is my life. And it's very clear that he's about to say, but it's my life too. But he stops himself. And it even in the script, it says, like, if something's going to happen now, it would be the time. And yet nothing happens. And we pull back and there's no music and it's absolutely silent and it's completely awkward and it's sad. And yet when we move into the next episode, you know, everyone's moved on and we're not going to talk about it again. And we're not going to, we will not speak of it. And that's just how they operate. And it's comforting in a way because we're used to them operating that way. But it is a very, very angsty scene and one of the angstiest endings ever. I think in terms of like just them not necessarily being on the same page, which is not, I mean, I don't want to say that's rare because they're constantly not on the same page, but like emotionally, they're usually always on the same page.
Yeah.
And is one of those moments where they aren't. And I just love it. I love everything about this episode, but particularly that final scene, that last shot, it's very striking. So that is my number five.
That is a tremendous pick. It came really close to my list as well. And but I had a pretty good guess that you would put it on yours, and I'm glad you did. So I get to talk about it anyway. I've mentioned a couple of times already how much the music influences how much I enjoy these angsty scenes, and this one works because of the lack of music. It was a really interesting choice to have no music at all. I think I've said before, and I think I've yet to find anything to the contrary, that this is the only episode that ever ended with no music at all at the end. Like those final little credits come up before the final theme runs, and there's nothing. There's silence. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a great choice because it's all about silence.
Oh,
it's
so
all
effective. About, yeah.
Yeah. That the sort of inability to communicate. And I think, it is like one of the angstiest endings. Like there isn't a sense of hope necessarily. This is a sense of we're broken and we don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And it happens. It happens sometimes. And it hurts my heart. It just, I struggle with angst when it's when it's caused by like conflict between Mulder and Scully, because it just makes me so sad. Like, mommy and daddy don't fight.
Yeah.
And, but that is super angsty and well done. And it kind of, that scene kind of turned me around a little bit on Never Again, which is not generally one of my favorite episodes, but I do really like that ending. And I'd kind of forgotten about it until someone mentioned it on Twitter, like, you know, a year or two ago. And I was like, oh God, I forgot about that. And when I went back to watch it, I was like, right. Okay. Well, Never Again has at least something good about it. And now I know there's other good things too. But that's still my favorite part of the episode by far. It just really, it just feels very raw and very real in terms of what happens between two people who love each other, who sometimes don't know how to get past an issue. And it just seems very evocative and very true to them as characters.
Yeah. I mean, when we talk about the moments where that we get that are few and far between of Mulder and Scully sort of laying their relationship bare, and this is them not talking, but the unspoken is so bare. You know what I mean? Like you can really, really get a sense of that here. And I even like the bad stuff, man. I just eat it up. I appreciate it.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes you want to die, but in a good way.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, great choice.
Thank you.
I love that moment. Love it. Number four.
Yeah, we're on
getting into some really top quality angst right now.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm prepared for these last four, man.
I don't know if I am either, but you know, I'm in a state of enjoying angst pretty much 24/7, so it's all good for me. My number four is my second choice from This Is Not Happening. That's the only episode that appears twice in my list because it's an angst-a-thon from season 8. And we mentioned the scene briefly earlier. It's the scene when Scully is doing the autopsy on poor Richie's friend Gary, who's been found dead in a field.
Oh, and thanks, Skinner.
Yeah, thanks, Skinner. And
it's his fault that she's crying. I think we need to point it out.
Yeah, it pretty much is. Let's all agree on that. Damn it, Skinner. She's trying to do this autopsy. She's trying to hold it together. And, of course, her heart is breaking because she can't help but think about Mulder and wonder if this is going to be his fate or has been already quite possibly. And, you know, she's trying to get through this. She starts to break down a little bit, of course. And Doggett and Skinner are there, and they're like, dude, what do you, I'm not sure you should be doing this. And she
says, I think they get it.
They get it. Of course, they know Scully.
Yeah.
And Scully says, I'm okay. There's work to do here. And that to me, that whole scene is very representative of Scully throughout season 8 until Mulder comes back, which is she's always on the verge of breaking down emotionally, and no wonder, but she knows there's work to do. She's got to hold it together. She's got a job to do, which is to find Mulder. And it just becomes increasingly difficult to try to keep those emotions under control while she carries on. And this is a great example of that. And then poor Richie shows up, played by the wonderful Judd Trichter, who we spoke to not long ago. I love Judd and I love Richie. And I mean, he only has like about two lines or something. He comes in and I think maybe all he says is, oh, my God, Gary. Mm-hmm. And
poor Scully.
It breaks
like...
my heart. Yeah, it breaks my heart every time. And yeah. Scully just feels for him. I always feel like there's like a little bond between Scully and Richie that, you know, they both had this same thing happen to someone that they care about. I think maybe I'm shipping Richie and Gary a tiny bit. What was going on there? Because Richie does seem just very, very attached to Gary.
Yeah.
So I've got that whole thing going on. Will there be a fanfic? I don't know. but it always breaks my heart. Like I feel the need to give Richie a hug every time he shows up, and he's just so sad. And Scully is so sad. Everyone is sad, and it's super angsty. And it's just like, it's all the implications of what does this mean for Mulder. So this is just like, it's very grim and very angsty. And poor Scully, she's trying to keep it together, but she's doing a better job of it than I am when I watch that scene. So that is my number four.
That's a good pick, and that's one I forget. Like, when you said it, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, okay. I remember that. And it's definitely, like, it's one of those small moments, but it's so poignant. And I like that you pointed out the idea that this sort of mirrors her behavior throughout season 8, because it always strikes me how at the beginning, especially like with Doggett, and like she's trying to be very tough, and she's almost standoffish, and she's almost like and you think that this is just her putting on a brave face because she needs to find Mulder, but then you think no, it's more than that. Like, she kind of has to, because she doesn't want them to know, especially Doggett. She does not want Doggett to know how much she cares about Mulder, because if he does, then they're going to use it against her.
Yeah.
And then, like, she says that to him later when he finally finds out about the pregnancy, that they're going to use it against her if they find out about their relationship. And that's kind of the reading between the lines that I'm doing. But I always kind of take her behavior to sort of be representative of that she's trying really, really hard to not put off an air of like, I'm crying because I'm missing my friend or slash lover, whatever he is at that moment. This is like, I'm doing what I have to do because this is my job. I'm on the X-Files. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I really like that idea. And I like that in this moment in the autopsy that we see her cracks, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And they do too. Doggett and Skinner do too. Not that Skinner doesn't know, but Doggett doesn't know. And so.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, because we rarely see that. You know, she rarely shows those cracks to anyone, even when she's alone. So she doesn't even allow herself to feel that, I think, a lot of the time, because I kind of feel like she feels as though if she starts to really feel the emotion, the sadness, the hopelessness of the situation that she sometimes feels, if she sort of gives into those emotions, that she'll never be able to drag herself back out again. It's like, I need to keep this together for my own benefit as well, or I'll never be able to once I start crying, I'll never stop. That's kind of how I feel like she is in that season. And this is a great example. And she's just being so freaking brave. I can hardly stand it. So I love it. And I mean, I love, obviously, this not happening, considering two top angsty moments from that episode on my list alone. And really, it's a fantastic angstathon, that whole episode. So that's my number four. What is your number four?
My number four is from I Want to Believe. And you know me, I am a sucker for breakup angst. And this may or may not come up later, but we'll see. But the scene in I Want to Believe when they're in the locker room and it's kind of a quote unquote breakup. I don't think it's really a breakup. I think it's we're a couple having a fight and you're sleeping on the couch. I feel like it's that.
Yeah.
I feel like it's that on the surface, even though there's so much more going on underneath and that, and we know there is because of what inevitably happens. But I remember when I watched this in the theater, it kind of broke me. I didn't really know what to think because I was just like, of all the things that I thought I might see on this show, these two sort of breaking up in this manner or like not kind of being on the same page in that regard is not something I ever thought that I would see. And it was, again, I love it because we actually get to see them talking about their relationship and how it's not work, like things about it are not working and it's real and it's gritty. And I love that. And it's the first time that we really see that because I mean, I Want to Believe is actually it's like the first time we're really seeing them as sort of a domestic real couple. So you think that, oh, we're just going to get all this wonderful, lovely kissing in bed stuff that we get in the early part of the movie, and then you know halfway through the movie they decide to just rip your heart out, and I still love it. I think it's a great scene. I think it's wonderfully acted by both of them, even though David has terrible hair. It's wonderfully acted by both of them. The music is I think there's no music here in this scene, right?
I think there's no music.
Some
in that
music
scene.
Maybe
I don't think there's any music. I rewatched it today and I don't think there's music, which always surprises me and it confuses me because on the I Want to Believe soundtrack, there's a track called Good Luck,
right?
Which is what Mulder says at the end of the scene. So it sounds like it should be from that scene, but there's no music actually in the scene. So I don't know if that was intended to go in that scene.
I bet
it's
was.
Effective without the music.
Yeah, I bet it was, or it's something that they intended to put on and it was just too good to leave off the album. And that makes sense.
Yeah.
But
I'm good with it.
Yeah. I mean, the scene itself is just really, really heartbreaking, effective. And even the way they leave it, we don't get a huge resolution. And so it remains heartbreaking to this day, you know?
Yeah.
That's my number four.
That's a great one. God, that's an angsty scene. Like I say, I rewatched it today. God, I mean, considering this is like 2008, it's been 6 years since David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson have been Mulder and Scully. But their acting is absolutely superb in this movie. And in this scene in particular, they both really nail it. And I agree that David's hair is very unfortunate, but that Scully's hair makes up for his.
Yeah.
Her hair is so good.
Yep.
It makes up for how bad his is.
It's even in a little braid, I think, in this scene, right? This is the scene where she's got her hair braided. I love that. Oh, my God. And we never see that again. Yeah. It's beautiful. Anyway.
I will always say that Scully looked her very best she ever looked in I Want to Believe. She looks amazing. But aside from that, brilliant scene, very angsty. It reminds me a little bit of that scene Never Again in the sense that we come to the end of the scene and there's no resolution and there doesn't seem to be any indication that of which direction to go in to find a resolution. It just ends with this kind of sense of where do we go from here? We don't know. These are hard issues. These are not easy things to solve. And it feels again very real, very raw, heartbreaking, and very like this makes total sense with these two characters that this would be a conflict between them. And they both communicate really well. It's like a fight without anger being present necessarily.
Yeah, that's not how they fight. That isn't how they fight. No,
they're just having a very sort of rational conversation about the ways in which they are currently incompatible. And it's kind of it's heartbreaking because it's all true. I can't take one side or the other in that conversation because they're both right in some way.
Yeah,
and I can see exactly where both of them are coming from. And there isn't an easy solution to be had here.
No.
And it's very, that's just like breaks my heart. Well, I'm so sad.
It's funny because it's like, I think it's similar to the Never Again scene, like you said, but I also think it's different in that I can watch this scene and the camera cuts away and I feel like I know exactly what happens, which is even more heartbreaking. I feel like Mulder is going to go off and do his thing and Scully is going to cry. And I know that's what happened. And that breaks my heart, even thinking about
Scully.
It. So yeah and I, because that's where they're at this moment. And he's off doing his thing and she's concerned about them. And it's heartbreaking. And I feel them both, like you said, but I mean, I think in this moment I sympathize more with Scully.
I see where she's coming from for sure. And this is like, this has extra angst in retrospect. I don't recall it striking me that much at the time, but knowing about the breakup in season 10, looking back on this moment, it's even angstier because it seems it appears to be an excellent sort of roadmap to what's going to happen to lead to this breakup, because, you know, it's not hard to imagine them breaking up after that scene, because though there are very valid issues here that are not going to be easily resolved. And in the movie, it looks as though they're kind of like, everything is fine at the end, although they're not really resolved.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like, let's all move on and everything's going to be fine. Cross fingers.
I wanted to say that I know we're not having an I Want to Believe discussion. We already did that. But I think that what's going on here and why they do end up back together at the end is that it's the same shit, different day. I don't think Mulder believes for a second she's actually going to leave him. I think he thinks this is all going to blow over. This is going to be fine. Yeah. And I think that's why he says things to her that he thinks that could be, you know, not misconstrued, that are hurtful. And she's trying desperately to make a connection again. Like, she grabs her hand, you know, this is what made me fall in love with you. All this. She in her mind, she's like, I'm really leaving you. In her mind, she's like, this is a bad time. Like, you need to take this seriously. And he's like, she's gonna come back. It's because she always does. You know, she always does end up following me. And and she does. And I think that's like the most heartbreaking part of it, is because she does go back. And you know, at some point down the road, she won't. And so when you think about it that way, I feel like the trajectory, again, I'm using the same word, of this movie and how it leads into the breakup and it leads into the revival, it does make sense. And I do think that they didn't necessarily break up. I think that that's kind of what the kiss at the end of the movie was about. But we do know that they are not where they need to be.
And the issues that come up in that conversation are not really resolved. And so it's easy to imagine that they would come up again. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's a really great point you make too, that, I mean, Mulder probably just never saw it coming.
Never.
That she would
never
leave. Yep. Because he put her through the ringer. I mean, Scully went through so much shit over the years. And yeah, he probably just thought, she's never going to leave me. She hasn't before. Why would she now? But, you know, at some point, there was a breaking point. And it's not hard to imagine, because it came pretty damn close in this scene. And so, yeah, it's not hard to imagine that something very similar happened that was just one step more.
And something's coming up on my list that we can continue this discussion. So I because this is all very important stuff to me when it comes to the angst of this show.
I love it. Love it. Yeah. All right, good. Let's move on to number three then.
Let's do it.
My number three, also from season 8. The angstiest of all the seasons.
Really?
This is from Within. It's almost the first scene of season 8. It's Scully looking into her bathroom mirror as she gets ready for her day with, a lot of wailing music in the background, which I love and you do not, as previously discussed.
It adds to the scene.
We're not tired of it yet.
Right.
This is the first time we've heard it, which is great. And again, it's like we were talking about with, you know, Scully in the car in the end. She's just acting without words and taking us on a feels journey with her. And this is very much like what we were talking about, where Scully, you can just see in the course of this scene, she's just so heartbroken, so sad, so lost in a way. But in the course of the scene, she just like gets it together and she's like, okay, toughen up, got to put on my face, my public face right now. And then it immediately segues into her sort of walking down the halls in the FBI. And she just looks like she's in a bit of a daze. Like, she can't believe this is happening, but she's got to keep it together. And it's just so heartbreaking and so tough to watch and so beautifully done. And like, I mean, Gillian Anderson should have gotten an Emmy for that scene alone, in my opinion, because I think it's brilliant, and I love it. So that's my number three.
Yeah, that's a good one. And it kind of sets, like we were talking about before, it's like in a tiny, one little tiny scene, it sort of sets the stage for her behavior throughout the season.
Yep.
In that one moment, it's like she's going to do her thing in the bathroom and then she's going to go and put on her brave face. And that's good. That's a really good one. And not the moment from within that I thought you would choose. But
it was tough for me to pick.
Right, right. But that actually is a perfect segue into mine. Yes. Which is another one from within.
Yay!
Maybe you can guess which one it is. But my number three is Scully holding onto Mulder's pinstripe shirt in
yes.
Within. This is like the height of angst, and this is probably one of the things that is so great about season eight, because it's full of moments like this. Like we don't get to see, you know, we don't get to see like kissing or anything like that, but we get to see Scully just missing the shit out of Mulder. And you see that a lot in season nine too. Yeah. So, you know, I can be here for that. I can be here for that.
I mean, that's a different kind of MSR. They don't have to be together for there to be MSR.
Exactly. So yeah, she goes to his apartment to feed the fish, quote unquote.
She's just here to feed the fish.
She's just there to feed the fish. And God, I mean, just honestly, Jen, when I think about this scene sometimes, I think, wow, they went there. They did that. It's the intimacy of her not only just like finding something and crying or whatever, but she is like laying on his bed, clutching his shirt. Like it says so much more about their relationship than they even said in season seven, I have to say. Yeah. It's probably one, and he's not even there. You know what I mean? And he doesn't need to be there. You get it. Like, and I remember watching that and thinking, you know, obviously I had watched it later when I had to go back and watch everything through. But I remember watching that and thinking, like, holy shit, like, I don't think we've ever seen anything quite like this. And she's on her own, so she's able to emote. But even so much for the viewers to see, it's very much like the scene in the car. Like, Jillian just gets to do something by herself, scene in the mirror, like you just brought up, and emote. And that's all she has to do, and you get it. And it's just so intimate, this act of her getting into his bed and grabbing his shirt and just crying and then falling asleep there. Like it's freaking heartbreaking.
It really is.
And so that's my number three.
That is such a good scene. I went back and forth about, I wanted to include one of those two scenes, either the one with the shirt or the one looking into the mirror. So I'm really happy that we got to have both. So
yeah.
I get my cake and I eat it too, because that is such a great scene and so very angsty. And I rewatched it today and I'm like, damn, yeah. I was thinking kind of the same thing that you were, that I'm like, damn, I can't believe like they were giving us all this.
Yeah.
I mean, like, she's in bed, like you can just kind of see just the way the scene unfolds. Like, there's just many steps in Scully's journey in that scene. She walks into the bedroom just sort of semi-casually, and then she sees the shirt and it's like, oh shit, there's his shirt. And it's just like, it's such an ordinary thing, of course. And when someone just vanishes like that, when someone disappears from your life with no warning, that's what happens sometimes. You know, things that are left around in a very casual fashion suddenly have like such immense meaning. And she's like, holy shit, that's his shirt. I could smell it right now. And like, she picks up his shirt and then it's like, oh my God, if I'm going to smell his shirt, I might as well lie on his pillow and smell him on that too. And
yeah.
Then just like, she's getting like this, you can just see that she's remembering what it's like to lie there with him. It is like almost the most sexual thing in some ways that we see.
Yeah, they could
from this pair.
They could very easily have just had her, I mean, even the shirt is intimate, but they could have very easily just had her pick up the shirt and just kind of look at it. And it would have gotten the point across, like, oh, you miss Mulder. But no, they didn't. They went further. They gave us that. They gave us the, no, she's going to go in, make herself at home on his bed, which she has before.
It's pretty obvious.
And clutch his shirt. And it's not just, hey, I miss my partner. Like, this is not that. No. And it's just one of those moments that when I really think about it, I'm like, wow, like they went there. They really did.
Yeah, it is like an amazing scene.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, there's no other way to interpret that other than that they were clearly intimately involved at that point. Yeah. And it's just like it's screaming to us because, yeah, they did more than they had to. If they wanted to have this nice little moment of Scully missing Mulder, then they could have stopped at the shirt.
Yeah.
Or, you know, she could have, if they needed to have her wind up sleeping there, she could have slept on the couch or something like that. But yeah. No, it's the bed. Mm-hmm. They go all the way and it's brilliantly done. And oh my God, so heartbreaking.
And not That's to mention really how defensive she is the next day when Doggett finds her. And it's like, oh shit, like I've screwed the pooch. You have found me. Yeah. In the bed with the shirt. Like, I don't even know how to get out of this. And I love her attitude.
Hard to explain.
Yeah. And her explanation is so good. It's so funny. Yeah. And the fact that she's just trying so hard to get out of it. And, you know, he's like, you're not fooling me. And it's such a great moment, and it's the first episode of this freaking season, and it's great. And yeah, season 8 has some stinkers, but overall, when it's good, it's fantastic. So
it is. I mean, for those of us that love the angst, season 8 is a nonstop angst treat. And I underestimated that about season 8 for a long time because I was too angry to feel the angst when I watched it the first time around. And when I went back to it and watched it again, I was like, how did I forget all of this amazing angst? It's fantastic. Yeah. So, yeah, it's just priceless. So, well done. I love it. So glad you picked that one.
Yeah.
Number 2. Holy crap. We're really getting there now.
Oh, yeah.
My number 2, not super surprisingly, from Redux 2, Mulder visits Scully in the hospital. I mean, he has a couple of visits with Scully in the hospital. There's a couple of amazing scenes of that nature. I picked his first one when they talk. Scully says to Mulder, "If I can save you, let me." Which is just one of my favorite lines of the whole series. You know, they're both kind of trying to protect each other. Mulder is trying to be sort of sweet and supportive, and Scully is being so freaking brave, I can hardly stand it. And he kisses her on the cheek. He kisses her on the hand at the end. It's all like, it's in a hospital, which you know I love, and it's so gorgeous, and there's great music in that, and yeah, that scene speaks for itself. So that's my number 2. I'm weeping right now.
I need to point out that this scene was written by Chris Carter. I just have to point that out.
Hello. Thanks, Chris.
Every time I have to point that out when it's relevant. This is a great scene. What strikes me about this scene is it's one of those rare moments. And I mean, you see it throughout the cancer arc off and on with Mulder, to his credit, where he's trying to talk about anything but the X-Files, you know, and he's really trying.
He's trying to do the right thing.
Yeah. He's trying to make sure that she knows it's about her. And he does attempt to do that. And throughout the series, even, he does attempt to do that a lot. And I mean, I think that's probably one of my favorite things is like Scully. Yeah. All she can do for him is the stuff that has to do with the X-Files. You know, all she can do for him is, like you said, save him. But all he can do for her is to not talk about the X-Files. So it's like they're both trying, like you said, they're both trying to protect each other. But it's just, again, this sort of missing each other. You know what I mean? Like just missing the meanings. Mm-hmm. And neither of them can quite get down to say what they really mean. And it's just, but you know, when she says, "If I can save you, let me," it's like, oh my God, like what a declaration. Yeah. And that's, and you can see too on his face. They both did such a great job in this episode. Even Mulder, like his face when she tries to get him to take the fall. She tells him she's going to take the fall, and he just can't believe that she's saying that. He's just like, wow, like we are here. Yeah. This is where we're at. And it's not only like, hey, you're willing to do this for me. I think it's also him, it really hitting him that, hey, you really think you're going to die. And cancer arc. My God.
The cancer arc is a wonderful angstathon, isn't it? I love it. Mm-hmm. I love season 4 for that reason. So. Yeah, that's a great moment. What is your number 2?
Okay, my number 2. Oh boy. Okay. I think that there's lots of angsty moments in the episode William. I'm not going to pick the one that you think I'm going to pick though. I'm picking Scully in the hospital after she's just brought William in, you know, after Jeffrey Spender has injected him with something. And they're working on him and she's just in the waiting room with Monica. And she's just holding his little hat. And it's just this scene of her being deathly still. And it's not the right word, but just completely stock still. Monica's kind of moving around as like the time lapse goes on, but Scully's not moving. And she is just rigid and not moving. And she's holding his little hat and she's just like sentinel. You know what I mean? And as a parent, like, I completely get that and I completely feel that. And that's hard to watch. That feeling of like, I mean, obviously I've never, thank God, been into a situation where I've had to be in that sort of mode of fear. But even just for a moment, when you have that fear that like your kid is hurt or that something is wrong, it just picturing that and imagining it is heartbreaking. And especially knowing what is going to happen and how hopeless Scully is and how she doesn't have Mulder there and she doesn't really probably know what to do. But in the end, she knows there's only one right thing to do. And it's the hardest possible thing that she can do. So this entire episode really qualifies. But I'm going to say that moment of her in the waiting room in the hospital with holding his hat is my number two. It's just heartbreaking.
That is super heartbreaking. It's just the little hat. The little hat is kind of like a major prop throughout that episode because he's wearing it when he shows up at the Vandekamps. He's wearing it at the start of the episode when he's with Scully. It's very clearly associated with William, and it's an adorable little hat. Yeah. And, oh, my God.
It just Scully, gets you, man. It gets you right in the field.
Honestly, Scully holding that tiny, adorable little hat and tiny, adorable little William, it's just, like, yeah, totally heartbreaking. And, like, yeah, really sort of like well shot and well conceived and just conveys so much without having to tell us. And
shout out to Duchovny who directed that episode. So,
oh, yeah, I keep forgetting that. But yeah, you know, he's a very talented director.
Yeah.
And that episode is one of the few in season 9 that I enjoyed. And because, of course, it's very angsty. Mm-hmm. And yeah, great choice for that scene. Yeah, that's not necessarily one of the scenes that stands out in my memory. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It is, you know, in a subtle way, super angsty. And it doesn't hammer you over the head, but the message gets through loud and clear. So,
and I think in that moment, she's already thinking about her options. I really truly do. And I think that, you know, by the time she's talking to Jeffrey in the holding cell and she's saying, well, but I can protect him. I mean, even the way she says it, you know, she knows she can't. And and I think
she's almost trying to convince herself.
She's feeling like a failure. And God, do I know that feeling. Like, and it's different again. Obviously, I don't have, you know, crazy people after my baby. So she's in a completely different scenario. But that feeling that you are failing your kid, that you're doing that no matter what you do, it's the wrong thing. I mean, her to like, you know, the nth degree is she's experiencing that in this moment and knowing that she has no choice but to let him go. And that's just, it kills me. So that's my number two.
It's just, so devastating. Like you say, there's no good ending there from Scully's perspective. And that's, maybe starting to dawn on her at that point, that whatever she does, there's going to be heartbreak. And so it's, tough to watch. It's a tough episode in a lot of ways, but beautifully done and beautifully angsty. So great choice. Really glad you picked that one. We're on to number one now.
We are.
Da, 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 da.
And we're doing Get honorable to mentions too.
So my number one is from Memento Mori, and it's the hug in the hallway in the hospital at the end of the episode.
Of course.
Of course. Not like a huge surprise. I mean, you look at my Twitter profile, that's my banner picture, and there's a quote from it in my Twitter profile. So, yeah, I love that scene. It's just so angstastic. It's a terrific hug, first of all. It's probably my favorite hug ever, partly because Scully has no shoes on. She's just wearing her little slippers. So the height difference is at its maximum, and I love it. Mulder's looking lovely in his leather jacket, and it's just a very intense, intimate, beautiful hug. And I mean, there's just so much emotion floating around there. You know, this is like, just the height of the cancer arc in a lot of ways, or it's just really very emotional. And I love the fact that, you know, they're talking about, again, there's like that bit of hope about how do we move forward from here. You know, Penny has just died. There's a lot of sadness at that moment. But there, you know, Scully's talking about coming back to work, and Mulder's giving her hope in the sense that, you know, he says, there's a way and you will find it to save yourself. And I love this idea that Mulder doesn't save Scully, you know, despite all of his running around in that episode. Right. In the end, he recognizes he's there to support her, and she will save herself because she's that damn good.
Yeah.
And I love that moment. I love that aspect of it. And my favorite line, the truth will save you, Scully. I think it'll save both of us. It's probably my favorite line in the whole series because, you know, it's the truth. And, you know, there's that implication that in Scully being saved, Mulder will be saved in different ways. And I love it. I love that. He kisses her forehead at the end. It's freaking gorgeous. I mean, this was, you know, season four. We thought all of our Christmases had come at once because there was this amazing hug and a forehead kiss. It was like, I was practically passing out with joy and excitement at that point.
She's like dying.
Yeah, but you know, I never really believed she was dying, I guess. Right. So it was all just, I just enjoyed the angst. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes things are just really, really sad and it's hard to enjoy the angst, but I just knew in my heart Scully was going to be okay. And so I could just enjoy all of that. And so that's why the cancer arc is so angstastic to me. It's because to me, I don't have to worry. It's not a stressful kind of angst. It's kind of like, oh, this is breaking my heart, but I can kind of enjoy it. So
okay.
That's why it's number one for me. And I mean, like hospital scenes always do it for me. And that one is kind of the tippy top for me because it's MSR angst at its best. And
yeah.
That's why it's my number one.
That's not a surprising choice. I think
no,
that,
not at all.
That's a great moment. And I mean, I feel like this is like the beginning of the cancer arc, you know? So it's like,
yeah.
We don't really quite know yet where this is taking us. And Mulder certainly doesn't mm-hmm. know. And I feel like at this point he's completely like, I don't want to say in denial because I don't, I suppose there's a fine line between hope and denial, but he is very hopeful throughout this entire episode. Like, I feel like there isn't a moment where he kind of loses the hope yet. And yeah. So I enjoy that about him here, and I feel like she needs that. So it's just, it's a very nice moment.
Yeah. God, I love it.
Yeah.
It's
good stuff.
I'm just thinking about it now. What is your number one?
All right. My number one. And now I don't know if we've talked about this before. Maybe we have. But the reason this is on my number one is because when they say things that hurt each other, it kills me. And this is in, believe it or not, the truth. This is just proof to me that, like, Mulder had such a long way to go. He really did. Mm. He is in the jail cell, and she's trying to get him to testify. And he's not going to do it, and because we know that he knows something he doesn't want to tell her. But rather than, you know, maybe going about that a different way, he tells her, I'd rather die. Mm-hmm. And those three words killed me and still do. Honestly, I'm still kind of mad about him for saying that to her and her face when he says that to her, because she's seriously there doing everything she can to spring him and free him and keep him alive. And keep in mind, she hasn't seen him for like a year.
Yeah.
And she's seriously like learning in that moment that it doesn't matter what has happened to them. It's not enough. She like she's probably just learning she's not enough. Like, I honestly, like, when I think about that scene, and I know that like Mulder doesn't actually feel that, but in terms of their terrible communication and where we know everything is headed, it just kind of breaks my heart to think about how she takes that and how she interprets that line. And it really, really, this is one of those that makes me want to die and like then makes me actually want to die, because it's it's not like, it's not even like the feel good kind of angst, you know. It's the this is terrible and everything is going to hell and the world is ending, obviously, and Mulder can't tell her, and it's just so bad all around. But her face, man, when he says that, and her face, and she just doesn't even know what to say. She just kind of nods like, yeah, well, yeah. What did I expect? It's just heartbreaking. I like, yeah. So I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate it. Mulder had a lot of shit to make up for. The breakup does not. It makes total sense to me. I know I've said this a million times, but we did not leave them in a place in the truth where they needed to be. And and I think it's all because of, honestly, because of that line. It's just that is just not something you say to the person that you are supposed to love. Ever.
Who's trying to save your life.
Yeah.
To say, yeah, screw you. I don't want you to save my life. I'd rather die.
Yeah.
It's like, are you fucking kidding me right now?
Sometimes I think about it and I still can't believe that he said that.
I honestly block it out from my memory because I think I find it too distressing. So I often do forget that he said that. But yeah, I kind of forced myself to rewatch that today. And damn, it's hard to watch. It's like, that is just like Mulder at his worst. I just want to punch him when he does that. It's like, dude, don't. There got to be a better way to handle this.
And honestly, he doesn't even really make up for it in the episode.
He doesn't.
No.
He really doesn't. It's all just kind of like, we're going to pretend that didn't happen. So I said, fine, I will be happily pretend it didn't happen too.
It's yet again, I mean, and I know Scully always makes the choice to be with him, but it's yet again just another example of him in a way sort of taking her presence for granted. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And and I don't believe that Mulder is aware he's doing this. But it's just, I don't know. It's just upsetting. So anyway, that is my number one.
I like the fact that, I mean, she doesn't let him get away with it within the scene. In the scene, she calls him on it.
Yeah,
and,
she does. You know, she does. She says, how could you say that? Yeah.
Yeah. She gives him quite a telling off. You know, this is, you know, this is about you and me, you and me. Like, she's reminding him.
Yeah.
They're in this together. And
he's
that,
just like, nope, nope.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
It makes no impact. And like you say, it's it's never resolved. And despite the fact that she made some excellent points and stood up, you know, pretty strongly for herself, she still just kind of, you know, throughout the rest of the episode, just kind of goes along with whatever he wants.
Do you want me to make it worse? Because
yes, I do.
We can always make it worse. If he had been put to death and they didn't spring him from the jail, that would have been the last thing that he said to her.
Oh my God, I never even thought of that. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yep.
And there was absolutely no reason to think that they would be able to spring him from the jail because seemed like a real long shot.
Can you imagine what was going through her head in that moment when she gets the call that he's going to be executed and she's crying? Yeah. Like, literally, well, so much for that. Like, honestly, it's terrible. It's so terrible. I can't even.
So terrible. I never made that freaking connection. But yes, it's absolutely true. Could you imagine if that's how it had gone?
I don't want to.
Mulder was he was an idiot. He was being such an idiot when he did that. So I'm still kind of mad at him for that. But, you know, season 11, Mulder was awesome. And thank God for that.
Season 11, Mulder makes up for it. And I just. Let's just hope that at some point he apologized to her for that, because
I sure hope so. Yeah. I mean, I'll assume that they had time on their hands when they were on the run and that at some point perhaps that issue came up. Maybe one day Scully just woke up and was pissed about it and thought, I'm having a note. We got nothing else to do. We have to hide in this motel room all day. We're having a note today. Mm-hmm. Let's just go along with that. Please, someone write that fanfic for me. I'd appreciate it. So good choice. Heartbreaking, upsetting, and distressing. So excellent number one.
Yes.
Now we're on to honorable mentions.
We do have an honorable mention, right?
We have a couple. Yeah, because I mean, like, how could we just limit ourselves to 10, considering I could easily have done 24? My honorable mention, to fit into the pattern, is from season 8. Of course it is. From an episode that we haven't discussed yet. This is from Permanum. It's a very brief moment, and it's near the start of the episode. Scully has in her hands an ultrasound of an alleged alien baby, not hers, but somebody else's. And she walks away from the X-Files office in the basement, gets into the elevator, and she looks terribly concerned. She just has this, she's worried about what this means for her, what this story that she's been told about this sort of alien baby. What does this mean? She's terribly worried. You can just see that she's wishing Mulder was with her. And then the way they shoot that scene, the camera pans back to the elevator doors. They open, and there's Mulder, because it's a flashback. And holy crap at that moment. I mean, it was a surprise. I mean, I think we knew he was going to be in that episode, but the way that they introduced him like that, I mean, I was just so happy at that moment to see Mulder because we hadn't seen him hardly at all, of course. And like, it filled me with such longing for Mulder to be back that I could kind of imagine that must be what Scully was feeling too. She was just thinking about him and longing for him and just seeing him again in his little FBI outfit. It was just like, oh my God, it's Mulder. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the first thing he says to her in this flashback is, there you are. I've been looking all over for you.
Oh my God.
Like, Scully's been doing.
I never really made that little connection. That's so.
That's the angstastic part of that.
Wow. And
so that little moment of Scully getting onto the elevator and then the doors opening and Mulder's there. And it's just, it just really gets me every time the way they did that. And to me, that is angstastic. So that's my honorable mention.
It was filmed really well, like you said, like the direction of it and how the camera work, it kind of went around the elevator and spun and Mulder spun. And it was just, yeah, it was a nice
really
little moment.
Cool.
And
really punched the angst.
Surprising. And oh God, she's always thinking about him. It just
always
it just makes me sad.
She just wants him there.
Wow. I didn't pick up on that. I've been looking all over for you. That's great. Oh, nice job. Nice one, Jen. I suppose I should say nice one writers, but nice one for picking up on that, Jen.
Thank you.
Okay, well, my honorable mention, and I put it into this slot because it's from an episode that you probably never expected to make it onto this list. My Struggle won. You know, we didn't get any breakup angst, really. The only sort of breakup angst we got, other than I Want to Believe, was this little tiny moment in My Struggle won when they're on the porch of the house and they're fighting about the X-Files. And not everything about this scene is particularly done well or acted well. I mean, this is their first episode back. I feel like they're still kind of finding their footing and the writing's not great, but you know, it's one of those scenes where you got to kind of read between the lines. Like, they're fighting about the X-Files, but they're not really fighting about the X-Files. Like, she's worried about him. She's worried about getting wrapped up in all of this again. And then the moment that I'm really talking about is at the end of this bit where she says he's talking all about the X-Files, and then they see Sveta in the house. And then he's like holding on to her shoulders and they're looking over. And in her mind, I feel like she's thinking, I mean, a lot of people read this as like a jealous moment. I don't, honestly. I mean, maybe there's a little bit of that there. But I read it as Scully seeing, oh my God, after all of this time, he's still onto this obsession. Like he's been drawn back in. Like I thought we were making progress. Like I thought he was making, not we, but him and his health and his obsession, it was making progress. But I see that he's now got this person in his house and and they're talking about all of this stuff that I don't want him to get pulled back into. And she looks at him and her face is so sad. It breaks my heart. It's like she's lost him. Like she says, you know what you're doing. And it reminded me, it made me recall that moment in the jail cell that he tells her the same thing in a prior scene. He says, I know what I'm doing. And it's kind of just like Mulder's way of saying, don't worry about it. This is me. I'm handling this. Yeah. And she's always the one who's just like, look, I am worried about you. I am in this too with you. It's like, even in this moment, even though we're breaking up, I'm worried, all right, that we're not together anymore. I am worried about you and your sanity and your health. Like, you know, even she says this is going to be your undoing. This is the moment in her mind where he is going to fall off the ledge again. And it's just heartbreaking. We don't get much of that. And you see it in her eyes. And then she leaves the house and she gets in the car and she just looks so defeated. And it's a really, really great moment in an otherwise, you know, I think of all the struggles, we can agree My Struggle one might be one of the strongest. I think it's probably one of the best.
It's my favorite.
Yeah. In terms of just storytelling and moving things along. But like, honestly, other than like the scene where they finally get together and admit their feelings to each other that we never got to see, other than that, I feel like the scene where they break up is the other scene that I would have really wanted to see, because I really would have wanted to see what finally broke them and how it all went down. And I feel like that, because I love that stuff, especially knowing that the breakup is a reality, I'm just going to let it wash over me and soak it up. You know what I mean?
Bathe in the angst.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like in that moment where she says that to him, you know what you're doing, and walks out, I feel like that's a tiny little window into what went down and the attitude between them and the and sort of the vibe of that breakup and how it happened. Yeah. So that's my honorable mention.
Yeah, that's a great one. I think you're absolutely right that that's probably the closest we'll see to what happened when they broke up. I can imagine it was a very similar conversation. And Mulder is describing Sveta as, I think, like the key to everything. And it's like, once again, another key to everything. So you just imagine Scully hearing that and being like, oh, you know, again, another key to everything. How many times? How many times have I heard this?
Right.
And not everything can be the key to everything, Mulder. And that's like the sign to her that he's like, he's gone, you know, off the deep end again. And yeah, she's just trying so hard to get through to him. And it's a brick wall. It's not going to happen. And she can see that. And it's heartbreaking. And yeah, that line when she says, you know what you're doing, it's like a double meaning in a sense that, you know what you're doing is in like, you know, I'll leave this to you. You know what you're doing in kind of like a slightly snarky way. But it's also, I think, kind of like, you know what you're doing here. You know that this is bad for you. You know this is bad for us. And, you
and you're
know
doing it anyway.
And you're doing it anyway. Yeah. This is exactly what we've talked about so many times. And you're doing it. And you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Like you're hurting me and you're doing it on purpose. Screw you. And that's kind of how I took that. Mm-hmm. And she's so heartbroken about it. She's not even necessarily, again, she's not necessarily angry at him. She's just really just profoundly disappointed at the situation and at the point that he's at. Even though, like you say, they're not together anymore, she's just so upset that this is what he's doing to himself and that she can do nothing to stop him. Right. And yeah, she's heartbroken. She leaves, she gets in the car. She winds up going back in again. I think it would have been more interesting if she had actually just left.
Well, I mean, I think it would have been, but I mean, that's not Scully. Like she's, even as she's getting drawn back into this, because she knows that she's like, I need to be here. You know, I still need to be here for him. We're not together anymore. So I don't have that hanging over my head. And I don't have this sort of guilt of needing to stay with him. It's kind of like, you know, staying with an addict or something. But I am here to support him and listen to his stuff. And I also need to kind of keep an eye on him. That's kind of how I read it. So,
yep. Like I can't stay out of this. You know, she never can.
Right. She never can.
You know, even when they're not together, she's still there, because where else would she be?
Exactly.
And, it's heartbreaking and beautiful. And that's breakup angst to the max. So good honorable mention.
You too. These were great lists, Jen.
These were heartbreaking in the most delightful way. I want to die, but in a good way right now.
Exactly.
I love it. I love it. Those were all great. And it's interesting. I mean, your angsty stuff is a little different than my angsty stuff, because it's all like totally subjective in terms of what gets your heart.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure our listeners will have their own sort of interpretation of what angst is to them. And that's what it's all about. You know, everyone's got their own take on it. And It's all great to talk about. And I mean, like, The X-Files is an angsty show. So for those of us that like it, there's plenty of different flavors of angst to pick from. And they're all great.
And I want to hear the ones that we missed. So people, send us your favorite angsty moments that we missed. Thank you guys for listening. Tweet at us at XFD Podcast. We went pretty long on this one, but I don't think anyone minds. And we will be back with you guys next time on X-Files Diaries.
Bye.